Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, I am really pleased to have been offered an opportunity to, after 7 years at this place, at the very same place, address more or less the very same issue, and also to mention from the very beginning that although I am an emeritus member of the Institute for Intellectual Property, I am going to address the issue here on access to medicines primarily from the point of view of a patient or potential patient who is primarily interested in getting access to these drugs. Some overlappings with the previous speakers will be unavoidable, but I hope not too boring to you. The roadmap, although I have heard this expression so oft and so often and so often not very successful. As you know, the roadmaps in the Middle East have never really worked out. So my roadmap here is just to make you aware that, first of all, medicines must exist before we can talk about access. We have heard a number of aspects about the contextual role of patents. I should reiterate a few of them, but not all, about the determinants of access. Dr. Chan already in the morning has, in a very impressive and eloquent way, demonstrated that not only intellectual property or patents are the determinants of access. Then mention a few more activities which, to my, let's say, satisfaction, have taken place between 2002, when WIPO for the very first time organized this kind of a conference, and today, and talking a little bit about the balances which are inbuilt in the patent system. Now, we have heard about the costs of development of new drugs. I hope that the Indian initiative with 5 million will be a success. Although I am a little bit hesitant to believe that the broad opportunity is in place, maybe some specialties can be done at the cost of 5 million. It would be nice. I must confess that my secretary made a mistake. I had only 800, not millions, so I thought that would be an ideal task, but then I asked the technical service here to add the millions. So before the FDA approval, some $800 million had to be spent. 10 to 15 years of development. One should also recall that only 8% of drugs entering phase one of clinical trials are eventually approved for marketing, and that also 4% of the approved drugs are later on withdrawn from the market for various reasons, toxicity, other side effects, and so forth, which also increases the costs. So the total costs maybe are around 1 billion. However, I would also like to add 1 billion, 5 million, 100 million, it doesn't matter. It is always a huge risk. Whoever has to invest 5 million will think twice or three times before that sum of money will be invested. So 800, of course, it is disputed. Also the question whether the pharmaceutical industry spends more on marketing than on R&D is always one of the points, but nevertheless, it is a substantial amount of money and it is a high risk. So the patents, to my understanding, have the contextual role on the one hand to incent this kind of investment, and by this, let's say, not secure, but provide the necessary circumstances for a sustainable flow of new drugs. They shield the enormous risks of drug development. They secure, and that's actually a crucial point, the recovery of R&D investment and profits through revenues in developed countries, including middle-income countries. Finally, one should not ignore, and I will be trying to address this issue, that this making profit enables also the pharmaceutical companies to provide for charitable activities, donations, alternative programs, and last but not least, also to provide for differential prices for least developed countries and low-income countries. Now, one of the questions this morning was, as I understood, we are talking very much about the incentives of patents for R&D and shielding and securing that investment, but what about the final recipient, the patient? One has really to bear in mind that only 19 of 319 items which are on the WHO essential medicine lists is covered by basic patents which are post-dating of April 1. In addition to that, one has also to be reminded that only 31% of possibilities to apply for drug patents are actually internationally used by pharmaceutical companies, meaning that in many countries there are no filings for applications for patents. So, in fact, it is very difficult to talk, apart from cases which always can occur, that patents are not actually a main barrier to accessing generic essential medicines in altogether 98.6% of cases. So one can say neither a barrier in many developing countries, but also not a essential necessity exists for having patents on a really global scale. Dr. Ataram, who provided these figures in 2004, has also thought through whether the obligations under the TRIPS agreement will change the situation, and he does not predict substantial changes because of the obligation to offer a patent protection for all kinds of inventions, meaning also pharmaceuticals, will take place. So the main access factors are poverty, we have heard, medical infrastructure for testing and treatment, training of health professionals, counseling, and from time to time, of course, also a patent. Now, when I was here 7 years ago, the global, at that time, UN Global Health Fund had only some 1.5 billion pledges in their treasury. In the meantime, the Global Health Fund, which is aimed at fighting AIDS, TB, malaria, is able to fund activities in 140 countries worth altogether 15.6 billion. And those 15.6 billion are from public and private sources. Particularly, for instance, Japan has contributed in the meantime 1.7 billion, also Spain and other countries, and there is also a special program, so-called Debt to Health program, in which Germany, Australia, and many other countries are involved. And then we have also contributions from private sources, companies, but especially laudable, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. One has to realize that by this fund, 25% of all international financing for AIDS globally is supported, two-thirds for TB and three-thirds for malaria. So the issue that there is a clear commitment and responsibility of international community of states and of all stakeholders has become more visible in the meantime. We have heard a couple of things about the access-promoting activities. Many international organizations and also several research-based pharma companies are involved in the so-called AAI activity, Accelerating Access Initiative. The President of the United States started an emergency plan for AIDS relief, now disposing of about $48 billion for the period of time between 2003 and 2013, covering in the meantime 114 countries. And we have also heard from Dr. Chan about the Global Alliance for Vaccination and Immunization, also having already 3.5 billion and supporting activities in 75 countries. Then we have the industry by themselves. I have selected only a few. I hope that the representative of Sanofi Aventis will not be somehow will not feel discriminated because I didn't find any data about your company. But here is what Merck is doing of the United States. They spent in 2007 605 million US dollars and altogether $828 million in charitable philanthropic activities, and 605 were in the so-called outreach program, which is addressing and devoted for developing and least developed countries. Dr. Wood mentioned Novartis already. Here are some data about the activities of Novartis, a company in the area of malaria with Coartem, leprosy medication free of charge, TB donations, Gleevec for cancer, and they have also established as a partner, as public-private partnerships, the Novartis Institute for Tropical Diseases in Singapore, whose focus is TB, dengue fever, and malaria. And they have also established an institute for vaccines research for neglected diseases in Siena, in Italy. So Novartis, if you take this graph, is spending actually more on this charitable, whatever you like to call them, activities than most countries do in terms of their gross national product. In case of Roche, the situation is a little bit different, but it's clear that Roche has also adopted a new approach as far as patents are concerned. They don't take patents for any Roche medicines in least developed countries. No enforcement of ARV patents in least developed countries or in sub-Sahara Africa. No profit prices for their drugs in this area, and they have reduced prices for low and lower and middle income countries. I would like to use this opportunity to remind, of course, everybody, because I've heard a lot about misappropriation, there are no angels around. So all companies, but also all other stakeholders, are mainly taking care of their own interests. So this is not a problem which should be, let's say, defined in a very narrow way. However, in these 7 years, we have been witnessing a quite substantial improvement in also behavior of pharmaceutical industry as far as access to medicines is at hand. Boehringer Ingelheim has also developed a certain patent policy. They have introduced expanded access to their two antiretroviral drugs, Viramune and Aptivus. They have voluntarily licensed that patents to many companies for least developed and low-income countries. They do not enforce patents. They have signed not non-assert declarations for supply in eligible countries, like for Aspen in South Africa, a number of companies like Cipla or Rembexi in India. They have also, under the Doha scheme, granted a royalty-free license to Apotex of Canada for the first and only, as we have heard this morning by Mr. Lamy, license under this Doha clause to deliver drugs to Rwanda. As we have heard, this has not been a great success until now, and we have not discussed why is it so. And I would just guess that also the generic drug producers want to make some profits. And if you sell drugs even under license-free conditions to countries with extremely low income, that is difficult to make any profit. Therefore, it is still the responsibility of the states to subsidize even this kind of activities. Boehringer has also preferential pricing for antiretroviral drugs, and they have also started a special activity for the prevention of mother-to-child transmission by that Viramune with a company based in South Africa. So what about the patent system? I am not going to try to explore the possibilities which can be offered by patent pools and so forth. I would just like to state and emphasize that at least in Europe and in most countries in Asia, United States is a bit difficult. We have a statutory research exemption which allows further research for improvements, for further developments, allows also clinical trials for finding further uses, and also for marketing approval. We have in the TRIPS agreement, and all WTO member states have to comply with this, a system for compulsory licenses, including compulsory licenses for dependent patents, and we have now in place also compulsory license of what I call Doha type, which is quite important to understand that under the Doha type, actually the differential pricing is made possible, and we have also the last possibility here as the international exhaustion of a patent right. Now let me conclude to stay within the 15 minutes which I was allotted. I think that everybody has to understand that the highest mid- and long-term priority is a continuous flow of new drugs. So whatever would be a serious obstacle to that should be avoided. Access to medicines and generation of new medicines are inseparable. One cannot discuss the first without the second because no matter how important generic drugs producers are, they can only copy something if something is in place. National legislator, therefore, and also the international community of state, is responsible for an adequate legal framework for both. And I think that, to a certain extent, we have it now already in place. Patents are instrumental for generating new medicines. They are the basis for access and follow-on generics, and also for charitable activities and differential prices. Patentees, however, are also responsible for a prudent and balanced exploitation of their rights. George W., not Bush, but Merck, as the founder of the Merck Company, in 1950 stated, "Medicines is for people, not for profits." That's, of course, true. However, as I tried to make it clear, if there are no profits, it's very difficult to get new drugs, if not impossible. No access-promoting activities are possible. No charity is possible. So making profits in the system which we have in, which is now international in place, is substantial. Not all drug companies, but a lot of them, and I have to add research-based or generics, have already entirely committed themselves to their responsibilities for people. There is still room for improvements. And if I take also generic drug producers, for instance, with the prices in India, they are much higher than the prices for their exportation. There are some reasons for that, but one has to recall that also generic drug producers have the same responsibility as the so-called ethical drug producers. And last but not least, the same is true also for all other stakeholders, governments, other branches of industry, NGOs, journalists, and so forth. Fight against poverty, medical infrastructure improvement, training and counseling are even more their tasks and responsibilities than of the industry. I thank you very much for your attention.